if you're a big fan of The Last of Us, I think you'll probably like this one. Your classic Grimdark fans are really going to like this.
Should I be more excited about this book? What else was... Convince me, it's better. Welcome back, everybody, to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Today, we are talking about the book Between Two Fires by Christopher Buhlmann. This will be a spoiler-free review for the first 10 minutes, and then we will warn you when spoilers are coming, so you're safe for now. Let's talk about these books as always. Okay, so the author, Christopher Buhlmann, this is the first I've read of his.
Yep, this is the second book I've read of his. I first read The Black Tongue Thief by him first. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed that, and that was a big reason why I moved and I read Between Two Fires, which is written before Black Tongue Thief.
And Between Two Fires, this is a gothic horror book set in the 1300s where the Black Plague, the Black Death, is rampant across Europe.
And also, the Black Death is a tool and battleground of the heavens between heaven and hell.
Yes. Yeah. Heaven and hell, Satan versus God, if he's there, the angels are there battling against demons. That's happening in the background while we are set in this gritty world across Europe where there's these two characters. Delphine, this young girl, comes across this disgraced knight, Thomas. And it's kind of in your Last of Us-esque where there's an older fatherly figure than younger daughter trope and where they possibly grow up on throughout the book. And you see their adventures where the young girl in this case wants to go to Avignon where the Pope is at the time. And this is actually accurate to in the 1300s. The Pope moved from Rome, the papacy moved from Rome to Avignon, I think for like a 60-year period, something like that. Historians correct me, and it's a little off on the 60-year part. But that's the premise of the book. And we picked up this book because it was for our Patreon book club, which if you want to join our book clubs every single month, link in the description down below to join us and chat about these books. So the patrons voted for this one. That's why we ended up picking up and reading it, at least why I did. You had already read this book prior?
So I read this book about a year ago.
Okay.
And so I was able to refresh my mind, go through it. But I'm excited to talk about this one.
We had Noah shout out from the Patreon. He is ex-clergy, and he's a grimdark fanatic. So it was perfect for his taste. He gave it 5 out of 5. Loved it. Where do you think most people landed from the discussion?
So the discussion in our book club started to be more dominated by some of the naysayers, but after getting the polling and seeing what people thought about it overall, most people thought it was a pretty good book, and some people really loved it, and others thought were a little disappointed. I don't think no one hated this book. No one really didn't like it, but most people thought it was book good.
Yeah. Well, what did you think, Rich? What's your Ramble rating out of 5 stars?
I think it's really good. I gave it a 3.75.
Solid. I think it's somewhat good. I gave it a 3.25 out of 5 stars. And we did change our wording a little bit. When we say 3.25, instead of saying above average, we say somewhat good now. Just a little, I think we're doing that instead now.
Yep.
Just because it's a little bit more accurate to the feeling we're describing.
Because what does average mean?
Whole thing.
We had a five-hour discussion on the difference between above average and somewhat good. And
it matters to us, okay? Yeah. It does. So why very good to you? Who would you recommend this book to? What'd you like about it? Spoiler free still.
I think your classic Grimdark fans are really going to like this just because of the setting and description and the themes it kind of goes over. It's very Grimdark. It's a great time for that. If you're a big fan of The Last of Us, I think you'll probably like this one. Okay. Because this is a very much a religious, it's a book that has a very religious setting, like literally heaven, hell, God, like the Catholic faith is basically real in this book. However, I don't know if I would recommend this like, oh, hey, all you Christians would really love this book. I don't know if that's the case. I don't think it's. Does it? I don't think you're going to dislike it if you're a Christian, but I don't know if you're going to love it due to that reason. Mm. I see the religion and faith here far more as a setting and than a accurate portrayal or anything. It's used as a mythology for the book, which makes it entertaining, but not necessarily thematically true.
Yeah, it treats Christianity more in the same way a Greek myth would treat the Greek gods.
Yeah.
In that kind of respect. And so, I give it 3.25. I'd say if to the 5 out of 5s out there, people that would love this, it's very atmospheric, well-written, and mm-hmm. gets you into this very gritty, grimdark. I think grimdark would be accurate for this. It portrays the time period and the atmosphere extremely well. Mm-hmm. And for your readers that can picture everything in your mind and don't have, what is it called, aphantasia, or that you're able to basically get a crisp, clear picture in your head. You might really like how Christopher Buhlman writes his scenes. I know our buddy Salty, admin this on the Patreon as well, he is that kind of reader who can just picture what an author is describing perfectly in his head, and it made the experience even better, more immersive for him, and just that's what made it all the better. Now, mm-hmm. the more on the negative side, the plot can feel like The Last of Us, like a video game, a bit of it. You're just going from place to place until you get to destination, and it can meander, and just you got to enjoy the vibes and the atmosphere along the way. Again, it's well written, but just more so, are you enjoying the scene by scene stuff that's happening, the juice that we can get into in the spoiler parts? But as a setup, I think some people can like the characters, because a great trope I do like is the father and the orphan daughter trope. It's always nice and endearing to see, and it does that well. The characters are interesting to follow. At least those the two mains have a nice quirky dynamic together. That also might cross. I shouldn't say anything else. I'll hold off on that. But have a dynamic there. Overall, for me, I was debating what to say with this, because I'm not the most enthusiastic about it. I wish I was more. I like talking about books where I'm super enthusiastic about. So I'm hoping you'll take more of the reins with that. Anything else you think we should say in the spoiler-free section?
Well, we should give a little bit of a plot summary of, like, give you what this book is about and up until the
Inciting incidents. Yes. Also, here's our category breakdown down below of what we thought of each category. But yes, so do you want me to go with that?
Yep.
Yeah. So the intro to this book, this is up to the inciting incident. So the intro is the year is 1348. The Black Death is rampant across Europe. Thomas is this disgraced knight with a band of thieves when a girl, Delphine, this is the girl we're talking about, she's an orphan of the Black Death where her parents died during this time. She comes across Thomas's band. And their band, everybody except Thomas, wants to rape the girl. And Thomas doesn't take too kindly to that, and he kills them all and saves Delphine from his bandmates.
He doesn't kill them all.
Oh, does not kill them all.
No, but almost.
Almost all of them, yes. And the inciting incidents to the story is Delphine, we get her character's point of view, who says she's seen angels and knows there's something going on beyond this mortal plane. There's something else going on, and she wants... There's a possible battle between angels and demons, and she wants to go to Avignon, where the Pope is. And that is the setup of, hey, these two characters together, let's go see the Pope and settle. Like, what is happening? Is God cursing us? What is going on? Why is the Black Death happening?
Yep. That's your setup. You get a little bit episodic nature of encounters and challenges along the way.
Yes. Anything else?
No, I think that's enough for spoiler-free, at least. Hey, quick break from the video to talk about our sponsor, Displate. They've been with us for a long time supporting this channel, and you should give them a shot. Check them out. You want an upgrade from your dumb, old, crusty, flaky, probably a better word, college paper poster? Get Displate. Nice metal posters, high quality, stick up on the wall with magnets. They have anything your heart can imagine. They got something. Whatever your passion is, they have a poster there for you. For the James Webb Telescope that's hanging currently in my hallway right now while I took it off the wall. They also have the Wheel of Time stuff that is hanging in my bedroom. As soon as this video is done, I'm going to put it back. Now, you can use the code 2 to ramble to get up to 33% off. That gives you a discount. It gives them money, and it gives us money. It's a win-win-win. You get cool product. Display gets sales. We get support for this channel. Go ahead, check them out. Support our channel. Thank you very much. Now back to the video.
So you saw what we thought. That's our pitch for the book. We hope we pick. If you want to pick up the book down below in the description there, go check it out. If you're interested, without further ado, spoiler warning.
All right.
Spoilers. This is your chance to click off. And okay. We're now doing a little bit of a different thing here of where we do a plot snapshot.
Yep.
We're going to give an overall quick plot. We're just going to rapid fire say what catch people up if it's been a while since you've read it of what happened in the plot, and then we'll go through our categories. Yep. So this should take very briefly here. But we said what the intro inciting incident was, right? They're off on their journey, and the midpoint of this book, along the way, we find out more about Thomas and Delphine. And feel free to interject, Rich. Mm-hmm. We find out more about Thomas and Delphine. Thomas, he turns out he's an accidental knight, a knight of the hare, who was given knighthood when... Do you want to take over?
Yeah, when the previous knight died, effectively.
Yeah. And there was this hare that was running across the battlefield. Like, a lot of people were knighted, and there was not a battle to come. And he's kind of like an accidental, like, oh, okay, I guess it was not a very honorable or gracious knighting. And they always made fun of, never seen as a real knight. And Thomas also had this arranged marriage that ended up being beautiful. And ended up really loving his wife. But when he was sent off to battle, his land was stolen, wife was taken by this Lord of Navarre, and this all happened before we see Thomas at the beginning of this book. This was all in his past, and when we see him with this band at the beginning of the book, it's now, this is the disgraced Thomas who lost his land, his wife was stolen, that's who he is. And so along their travels, they pick up a priest who's committed the sin of sodomy, and he's an alcoholic. And they travel through the plague in Paris. They go from town to town. And when under attack at the point of the book, the priest sacrifices himself and saves Delphine. Now, obviously, there's a lot in the middle there, but ends up saving Delphine and dying. Now, you have your all-is-lost moment of the book where Thomas loses Delphine, but he runs into his arch-nemesis, we mentioned, the Lord of Navarre, who stole his land and his wife, that this person we just talked about. And there was this duel scene. Do you want to pick up?
Hey, keep going, please.
There was this duel scene. The Lord of Navarre dies. And what Thomas does, he disguises himself as the Lord of Navarre and goes through Avignon to meet the Pope, disguised as...
Divine way of disguise. Like, the angels or something is allowing him to do this.
And climax of the book, in Avignon... Battle between the two popes. There's this true pope, and there's this the pope that is corrupted by the demons. Actually, explain this correctly for me. So one of the popes was the pope was killed. Hidden or
the
taken
pope
away.
Was hidden, stuffed inside of a barrel.
That's it. Yes.
But the fake pope is
demon. Yes,
and trying to lead the path on. Trying to lead the church into sin. And, you know, if you kill the Pope, that's the best, you know, it's the last symbol leader of the Christian faith. So, but, you know, Thomas saves him. Delphine restores the actual real Pope onto the seat, but also she and Thomas die. Thomas goes to hell.
Yes, Thomas goes to hell. Like, hell, really hell. Suffers. But comes back to life.
Delphine also sacrifices herself. Angels literally explode out of her body and battle the demons back from the depths of hell. And then at some point, as Thomas is in hell and experiencing incredible torture, Delphine comes and drags him out of hell to be reborn on Earth.
And it goes back to being able to relive their life, where Thomas gets to live life before this whole debacle happened, the pretend the death never happened, and he comes back with his wife in the end of the book. She taps three times. There was this whole symbolism. There's this little cute love story of every time that to remind themselves of their wedding nights, the wife would tap three times to remind them of their wedding nights. And so we know he's back with his wife, and he becomes a Franciscan, and Delphine becomes a nun. And they developed this bond and this, they were able to live another beautiful life after having been through hell.
Yep.
So that's just a quick plot snapshot summary. Sorry, we debacled, butchered a little bit of it, but we'll catch up to speed now, get into the details. All right, you ready?
Yep.
Emotional impact. What did you give it out of 5 stars?
3.5. Thought it was good.
That was good.
Emotional endpoints, like I think the beginning and the end definitely had the most emotionally moving scenes. The middle was a bit episodic for me, of it dragged a little bit too long for me.
I gave it a 3. I was neutral emotionally. Okay. Yes, which hence my dry tone with this one. Yeah. So what was it going for? What moments did hit for you?
I'd say the entire sequence with Thomas in hell worked really well for me. Especially going through, there's of course like the body torture, which I could see the argument of that scene being more descriptive and just like body horror porn. But I think it goes beyond it, of hell is all about taking what you love most and corrupting it, and nothing worse that a demon could do, with taking what you value most and making you ruin it. So him at this point, Thomas values Delphine. He really cares about her. And so the torturing is pushing him toward violating that relationship that he has with Delphine. And so I think that works really well as like an actual torture scene, especially for how it's supposed. Body horror of like, I cut your arm off, or peeling your skin. Like, there's the physical horror, but there's the corrupting what you most value is top tier torture.
Yeah, throughout the book, I guess that has to be the primary emotion of what dread of this living hell. Of you see death everywhere. Paris is... Every location that Thomas and Delphine go to on their journey is just ravaged by the Black Death for the most part. There's this one chapter where it's not ravaged and it seems like this town's doing super well, but it was all illusory.
It was just a demon that was in control of it. Mm-hmm. And, because the demons are the ones that brought on the Black Death, they can play with, the cost of your soul. You can have a fake paradise on Earth.
Mm-hmm. The moments that got me most invested or feeling invested in the book was between whenever Thomas and Delphine had some nice character interactions or moments. I like that we learned more about them as it went on and weren't just fed it right from the get-go. They slowly grew on me. So that was something that I guess why the whole death and atmosphere mattered is because I started to care a bit more about them. Mm-hmm. By the end of the book, and there was that cute line of dialogue back and forth between them of her just asking so many questions to Thomas, and going, I'm from Townsville, town of town, just stop asking questions, and then having that back and forth constantly. That was the in-sequence scenes, the cut scenes in a video game, where you get that back and forth dialogue between your characters. That was always neat.
Yeah.
I guess the scenes were also done well with the descriptions and the horror. But beyond that, I would agree. I guess I don't know if you would agree with this, but I would say I wasn't like the most invested with the story, I guess. I was an admiring participant. It was.
Sure. I'll give another one of it. I really enjoyed it. I was quite excited for the scene. It was earlier on in the book with Thomas going to face down the snake in the snake on the river, and more particularly how it's set up of him back and forth, not wanting to actually do it, but seeing how dangerous it is, and him kind of living up to be a real knight. And it very much harkens back to the whole, knight to go slay a dragon, and how it's built up and then eventually his confrontation with it. I thought was really exciting, and I thought that was just such, it kind of disappointed me. And also it was like, that was the highlight for me. And then other monsters that Thomas and Delphine face later on are not nearly as exciting and well done to me than that early scene. But I really liked that one a lot.
Is there a scene that didn't connect for you as much?
The one that I guess it didn't disconnect with me too badly, but it should have been more impactful was the death of Father Matthew. I would expect it to hit harder, but it really didn't. It was more of expected, like, all right, time for the,
noble sacrifice.
Time for the noble sacrifice. This book clearly wasn't going to have all three of them survive the end.
Right.
So I felt like that should have been, I just kind of took it in due course and moved on.
Got it. Anything else for emotions?
No, that's about it.
Do you want to go into thought provokingness?
Sure.
I gave it a 3.25, somewhat good.
I give it the same, 3.25, somewhat good.
Somewhat good, yes.
This falls into my thought of, this book is clearly about forgiveness, right? And, you know, does anyone deserve to be redeemed and forgiven for your past sins? How do you deal with that? And I, through our book club discussion, I thought that was initially what I thought. But through our discussion, someone brought up the idea that this is more about resilience and it's one thing to do the right thing when it's easy doing it one time, but imagine in a situation of a living hell, how do you keep doing the right thing day after day, surrounded by death, carnage, destruction? And so that endurance for being good is maybe a theme of this book. And I appreciated that aspect of our discussion.
And Francesca from the discussion, she said, I'll quote, "For me, the strongest message was that we can be flawed, make mistakes, be a bowl that leaks, as Delphine calls Thomas, and yet we can still learn, grow, make a difference in someone's life, give and receive love, etc."
Mm-hmm.
And it does encapsulate it really well, what you said too. So forgiveness being a big thing, that redemption, who can be forgiven? It does seem like in this case, the worst of worst, a demon, can be forgiven.
Yes, which,
or redeemed in which way?
There was the scene of when the angel slays the demon, that from the corpse uprises the angel, of which, like, you know, demons being fallen angels, and it's being redeemed and brought back up to heaven, which our buddy Scott confirmed to us, like, via scripture, like, no, that's not how it works. Demons cannot be redeemed. Yes, they are fallen angels, but they cannot be redeemed. That's not the same way that humans can. So, not biblically accurate, but that's the point. It's not.
It doesn't have to be.
It's a book. It's a story. It's just using the Christianity as a mythos.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
what did you think about the point? The question about evil here is God indifferent? Is that why the Black Death happened here? Is there some sort of reason for this torture and death?
I think the point of the book ultimately is God sent, you know, Delphine and Thomas. That was God's answer, and the angels and all that. But
then you had the symbolic representation of Adam and Eve.
Yeah, certainly. But is God indifferent, like, to the black death? And especially when you add on that this is the demon's manipulation and that God is unanswering for a good chunk of it. As far as I'm understanding, with part of the whole deal with, at least with Christianity, that humans have a freedom of choice, like, that is the whole point of free will, is the reason why God will not get as directly involved in some instances, is because humans are allowed to make the choice. However, demons influencing you, like, you still have freedom of choice, but demons will maybe not force your hand, but corrupt you. God will allow you to be corrupted because that's your freedom of choice. That's your free will. But this book takes it a little bit step further of demons are not just, you know, corrupting people. They are killing people and just taking over their bodies and all this stuff. So, yeah, in this book, it seems like God is far more indifferent, that the demons don't have to regard free will, but God still does. Doesn't seem very balanced.
Mm. So is that why you didn't give it higher? Were you looking for more? But what's something about it that you wish it touched on more?
If this book is all about redemption, I think it does a fine enough job. That's why I'd say like somewhat good. What it could do more, I don't know. I've just kind of seen this stuff before. Of just the character that did a lot of bad things and eventually, you know, cares about someone and will do the right thing. It's fine. It's pretty good, but nothing beyond it, really. And especially with it not being using Christianity more as a mythology and backdrop rather than more of an actual Christian idea. Like, if you're going to use Christianity as a backdrop, I would rather it be the Christian idea of redemption. Same thing with, you know, the Greek mythos should have, you know, the Greek ideas of religion embedded into it. So that's a personal thought.
Gotcha. Yeah, this one, when we were talking in the book club discussion as well, there was a lot of the discussion was focused on the thought-provokingness or just the themes of the book, and there was symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
Adam and Eve being there. There's also we talked about Thomas's riding a donkey and mule rather than a horse, and that being another symbolic gesture.
It's a gothic theme.
Yes, and just to show it, and we gothic essentially being the ugly being exemplified, and that also worthy of God's grace and forgiveness. Even a donkey that is typically seen as an ugly animal, which they're not.
They're very cute.
They're very cute. Go talk to a donkey. They're great. Quick side question. I was looking up, because you know how donkeys have a laugh, sounds like a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking up, do animals laugh? Because humans, we have such a distinct soulful laugh. It's great. Yeah. But then apparently rat mice laugh, but just at a frequency we can't hear. Just in case, that was interesting to you.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
And it weirds me out. So you're telling me that rats could be laughing at us within these walls and we wouldn't hear it?
Nope.
I don't like that even more.
Yeah.
You would think laughing, the fact that rats can laugh would make me empathize with them more.
Oh, it makes it more disgusting.
It makes it more disgusting. I want them gone. The fact that I can't hear them laugh makes it worse.
They're laughing at me.
They're laughing at me all the time. When I see a rat and they're silent,
The holidays are coming up fast, and it's time to shop, but actually have some fun doing it.
Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
On uncommongoods.com, they provide art, games, books, DIY kits, home accents, and all sorts of accessories. What makes them unique is that about half of their assortment is handmade by independent artists and artisans.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. For moms, dads, teens, from book lovers to history buffs to anyone who hit their quarter life crisis and started running marathons.
Excuse me. Okay, well, that's my better half, Nicole. She's one of those marathon runners, and I got her a gift from the site. I ordered this custom metal holder for all the races she completes, where there's also a place to put her personal records on there. I'd never seen custom built case like this before, and so I got her the gift, and I'm gonna surprise her with it.
Yeah. Hey, every time you purchase something from Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Also, every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/2toramble. That's uncommongoods.com/2toramble for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
I assume they're laughing at me.
Every time you miss it from a trap or it just never works, they're just this fool.
I hear in the silence. That is not empty silence. It's their laughter.
So neat side tangent, but yeah, as far as the theme goes, I agree. I say somewhat good just because seeing the redemption kind of stuff, but it does make the symbolic gestures, the atmosphere. It doesn't do anything anything wrong necessarily. Yeah. It's just it's not something that I'm going to be thinking back to as an example.
What do you think? I'll ask the question right back to you. What do you think the book could have done that would have maybe increased the score for you?
I was asking you because I was curious.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, if I had to answer that, I'd say, maybe it's just the package itself never had the chance to be as thought-provoking to me in this package. So maybe the premise itself had to have a more interesting question. So it's not even the execution. Here's the thing, because when we're talking about thought-provokingness, it's both the themes, the message itself, and it's the execution of it. This is a book that executes it well enough, and there's nothing, I can't say it did anything wrong. It's more so the idea and the theme itself. How much of an interesting angle are we getting? Does it add a perspective? And does it play around with that in a way that could have been more interesting? To me, it being, I guess, focused on Delphine and Thomas, I would have liked more of the angel demon stuff where we got the hints of it and we got Delphine's perspective, but maybe amplify that. If that was amplified and we got to see more of an interesting back and forth there. Now, what is that? I don't have the exact substance to add, but that's what I think, because that's maybe where it went more in the, hey, the I've seen it before category for you instead of the,
yeah,
maybe something.
That. To that point, just by the nature of the structure of the book, we are given details throughout the book that Thomas was a much worse individual, that we don't actually get to see all the terrible things he's done, that he has done worse things than what we see in the book. However, we're taken a fallen knight. He's a brigand, but the first instance we meet him is that he saves a little girl from being raped and then decides to protect her and take her to Avignon. And as the book goes on, he does little things of, hey, don't kill that man, give mercy. But like, for the most part, he is not doing anything particularly awful. He is doing, he's doing maybe not great things in a very wicked world. And
you're always kind of rooting for him, right?
Exactly.
There's and that so scene where he goes into Delphine's room and almost in the middle of the night and almost.
Yeah. Which, almost whatever YouTube friendly word you want for. He almost rapes her.
Right.
I know YouTube doesn't like that word. They have
flags and that, but
whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway. Which is part of like the demon's thing of corrupt what you most care for.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a hard place to start like the journey of redemption when we start the book and introduce the character.
It's a good point, yeah.
Starting at a okay place. He's not the worst. He's actually pretty good. He's doing all the right things. And then you tweak a little bit here and there. Hey, maybe show some mercy every now and then. But when you get to the end of him being thrown into hell and have to redeem his actions for all the other sins that he's done, and that no matter what good actions he does, like, that will not make up for the sins that you have done. Like, you to be forgiven, you need God's grace.
A lot of it's his brutality. Do you want to talk characters and keep on that topic? Because I gave characters a 3.5. Good.
Yeah, I gave 3.5 as well. I thought they're good characters. Thomas more so than Delphine.
And staying on your point about Thomas, especially at the beginning, of him already being rootable and doing a good thing and saving Delphine, the bad side of him is how brutal he is. There's that one scene we see where what are they to do with the thief? And Thomas wants to put a sign up there about what this thief did and tells Delphine what to write. Do you remember that scene where he's basically telling Delphine, like, hey, I'm a thief. I forget the exact wording Thomas uses, but be brutal to him and summarize that. Then Delphine translates it onto there because Thomas can't read it, and Delphine writes something much kinder to not treat this thief so poorly, and it kind of shows you Delphine, the softer side, and Thomas is your brute. And that is his bad side presented. It's not necessarily that we see, again, from the get-go, we don't see this awful, awful person. We already see he is doing a good thing for Delphine. Doesn't let Delphine get hurt. Whereas, I'm not going to spoil this book at all, but the previous book I read was Pilgrims by Imar Leonard, and the start of that book is seeing a pretty almost irredeemable character doing awful things and then being faced with the fact of, is the good he does enough to make you root for him? It plays with that idea in a very, like, makes you kind of put your face in the mud of, are you going to still root? Is he redeemable? Right. Mm-hmm. And this, it's more so the atmosphere is irredeemable than it is the character. It's more atmosphere of the book. The more I'm talking about this, I think I'm moving my rating down for the book to a 3, just by the way. I do think that that is something that I wish I did more of now.
It's the choice of showing us all, or telling us, the reader, what all mm-hmm. the bad things Thomas has done after we've already seen him do the good things. Mm-hmm. And so it's a softer way
Yeah.
Oh, hey, actually, Thomas is a real bad guy. But us, the reader, are going like, oh, yeah, we've been rooting for him the past 200 pages. Like, he's already been doing the good stuff.
The character work does happen in flashbacks a lot.
Yeah.
Because then we see him and his wife, how his land was stolen. And
so when you're telling a story of redemption, I think it's... I find it a more challenge. It's certainly more challenging, but more enjoyable when you have, like, from the get-go, a character that you're asking the question, like, ooh, are they redeemable? Like, oh, they're doing some awful things. Like, I'm the reader, am not on the character's side. But then you see them grow and change. That's like, oh, well, do they deserve redemption at the end? That's a bit more fascinating than they start off pretty good and then they end better.
This is your grimdark setting with a pretty noble character, the way we see him now.
Yeah. Again, by that description, we know that through flashbacks, he has done worse things. He's killed innocent people. He's raw. He's done all these terrible things. Mm-hmm. But we don't get to see that till much later in the book. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and that goes into the emotional side of it and overall the character journey.
And to give an example, this might be a little of a spoiler for a different book. Mute this thing, Nick, just so you can let me know. But does in flashbacks, we find out how bad of a person he was. See what I mean?
So this is,
I don't know if I could say that and talk about, it's a big book series. I'll say this, because this won't give away too much. There's a character in the book series Stormlight Archive.
Sure.
And if you know, you know. Otherwise, ignore that, right? But that character in that book, who we find out in flashbacks, you know what I mean?
Yes. So, I think the structure of that reveal is done better. Mainly because it's not just the audience that finds out, it's other characters and the ramifications of that matter. And so
It's the packaging.
It's the packaging and how that's done. And I think it's more effective than this.
Where the reveal happens to the character themselves too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And this one, it is, that information is kept from the reader.
But not the person.
But not the person. And it's more for... It's done as a narrative trick to get us to care about the character a bit, like, so we don't
hate them from the get-go.
Hate them from the get-go, and also another, like, just pull of, like, curious about this character, or I'm going to tell you a bit more.
Yep. But that's the first character that came in mind when we're talking about doing that in flight. Yeah.
Sure.
This being said, I think the characters were good.
Yeah, they have unique character voices.
Yeah.
Some good back and forth and banter. I think Thomas and Delphine's banter back and forth gets a little stale in the middle at times.
Him calling her, you know, her father was a lawyer.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I still thought that was cute.
It's somewhat cute, but Thomas's gruffness just...
got tiring to you?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point.
I can see that.
And then Father Matthew is fine. I like the dialogue he adds. Like, his character is not nearly as interesting as what he adds to the dynamic of scenes. When it's just Thomas and Delphine, that gets a lot older pretty quickly. But when you add Father Matthew with his humor and sense of levity and how all three can play off each other, that worked a good job to add a different flavor to those scenes.
Right.
That was missing when he was gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But about his character itself, meh.
Agreed. Yes. Should I be more excited about this book? What else was... Convince me. It's better.
I don't know. We've been matching pretty closely yeah, on scores we're right now. We're matching.
Let me find a way to disagree with you. Hold on.
I'm about to get in after the next score. Like, my last two categories are decently higher.
Mine too.
Oh, damn.
The worst book reviews are when we're like, yes.
Yes, I know.
Concur.
Concur.
So, I agree.
Anything further with let some me of
think,
the characters?
I'm trying to think to add to a conversation because we should be having one of those right now. So let me think. I want to what substance to add to what you said.
200 and what episode is this?
Something embarrassingly high.
220 something episodes. Not all of them are going to be winners.
Yeah, if you're watching this episode, woo, poor you. This ain't a winner.
I'm sorry. We thought the book was pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good at the end of the day, but like, I don't have much to say. Like, I'm more impressed with technique and atmosphere.
Yes,
the
execution.
Execution, rather than the actual plot and character of the story. Ah.
But you're big enough atmospheric readers where you could really enjoy it. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Delphine and Tom, I don't have anything else to say. I'm sorry. We do our best to be substantive with these. Let's go to plot.
Okay.
Plot, I gave it 3.25, somewhat good. I might go down to a 3 now, but
my rating also gave it a 3.25.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to...
Again, middle dragged quite a bit for me.
Middle to drag.
From after the inciting incident, ultimately until basically the demons and angels start fighting, it was very much monster of the week type of plot. And where episodic in nature, you know, Delphine, Thomas, and Father Matthew go to a town. Demon influence them, like some type of monster, demon influence something. And, you know, Thomas says, I'm going to beat him up. And Delphine's like, no, Thomas, don't be kind, be merciful. And then Thomas is like, sometimes he's like, I'm just going to do it. Delphine's, I'm so disappointed. And then sometimes he listens to her and she's like, oh, I'm so happy. And that's, you know, many times of that. I do a good job.
Yeah.
I describe them. And some of them were really, here's the thing. Many of them were fun scenes of like, ooh, spooky, and the atmosphere and how it's described is creepy, and I liked that.
But then
the plot beat itself was a little boring. Like, I'm just like, okay, next town, next thing.
I guess what was supposed to be the biggest, not that it has to have a plot twist, but any sort of structure to the plot that made this atmosphere, the book's idea, better. So something about talking about the midpoint, for example, of roughly when the priest sacrifices himself, that didn't wow you because, hey, you've seen that before, is what you said.
But, then you have. And also, I just didn't care much about the priest, and I just knew it was going to happen. So it's.
And then your All's Lost confrontation, where we get to meet his enemy, and we get to see, I guess, the ultimate climax of the book as well, the battle between angels and demons, right? Anything.
This also does get like two endings. It's weird. Like the initial battle that feels like, oh, this is the ending somehow. And then it continues on, which is weird.
Yeah. See that?
I guess it's a point in its favor of it was an unexpected structure to the ending.
Yeah.
After the demon battle and after the death and still continuing on. But okay.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on the plot overall?
Yeah, it was structured in, what, 5 parts? And then we had each part, and I remember in our discussion, we talked about part 5, where it was then the Lord made answer. It was all about the angels and demons in the background. Each part, we get a little snippet, and then zone back into what's happening between Thomas and Delphine and their adventures. This is one of those plots where, what's the trope? Not a quest plot. I guess it's somewhat of the quest plot of go to point A to point B.
Yeah.
Mad Max Fury Road, your favorite book, Lonesome Dove.
Yes.
Go to point A to point B. So what can you do within that plot structure to make it interesting? What gets all about the characters, atmosphere, all those other things you can do? So to this is not a book where the plot itself is going to be the shining example of why people love it. I don't think, maybe I'm speaking for people who love the book as well, but I don't think that's the reason they would love it. I can't see this being the strong suit of go point A to point B. What happens on that adventure is, like you said, episode of the week, and then Priest dies. Climax where he meets the person who... It's a very easy plot to describe. At the same time, like, yes. I don't mean to oversimplify.
However, my favorite of those plots, a lonesome dove, if you will, is on the basis of, like, okay, they're going from point A to point B, but by the time you get to point B, so much has happened. Like, you wouldn't have been able to predict all the things that have happened along the way. And it normally feels like it's always fun when the very beginning you go, oh, easy journey. That's if you're going to like, oh no, we're just going to go from here to there. And that's it. And finding all the loops and trails and hurdles along the way. And that is very fun. But by the time you get there, they're different characters are going like,
that's the thing. It's fun characters.
I can't believe that we thought this would be a simple journey. And the characters have fundamentally changed on their journey there. That's the best part about it, is thinking it's a simple journey and then it turning into a dramatically different one and a more entertaining one. This one didn't feel like a simple journey from the get-go of with the angels and demons, and then it became more biblical by the end. So I don't know. It didn't work as well for me.
World building?
World building.
Out of 5 stars, I give it a 4. Great.
I gave it a 3.75. Really good.
This is where we're talking about the atmosphere. I think it does do a great job at setting you in this black plague. It got me a little bit interested in the Avignon, the papacy in France as well, of that just historical period. But to me, it does do a great job on the technical level of the book.
Sure.
To me, the world building and the prose is more when you're talking about the quote unquote the craft of writing.
Sure.
That's the stuff that when you see a really good writer like Christopher Buhlmann does a really good job. And yeah, and I'm like with you, I'm not the whole lore or mythos thing it's not one of those books that I'm picking up and curious, oh, what's more? I want,
The reason why I gave it a 3.75 instead of any higher is using Christianity as a mythos rather than taking it a bit more seriously. That was my, it's believable, but not as immersive as it maybe could be.
Yeah, I put some more emphasis on just the atmosphere with a capital A. Just wow, they
sure,
did a great the job with that
setting.
Time setting. Yeah. That was all. Like when I was reading it, I was immersed. I was going, okay, this is it. The one thing that was pulling me through the book was how intense and grim it was. So it did a solid job with all that stuff. And book starts in 1348, if I'm correct there as well. We get to see the streets of Paris. And it was neat. Some of the little side characters we didn't talk about that we met along in Paris too, and how Jews were viewed, how Jews are always viewed, I guess you could say in history. And so you have this
a tale as old as time,
right? I mean, 1348, right? And so you have this, it very much pulled me in, is what I could say about it. And and you have I wrote down Pope Clement the VI, it was, and I got to give credit to a book where it gets me a little bit interested to do some Google searches of, what did Pope Clement the VI actually do? Like, who was he actually?
And how did he actually respond to the Black Plague? And
yes, I was curious. Yeah.
Now, something also interesting with this is, so there are thoughts on how the Black Death affected the Catholic Church. Specifically on the people who were most, like the people who died the most during the Black Death were the people who were close to bodies, which were priests. Priests were far more likely to actually die during the Black Death because they're giving people their last rites. They're performing burials. They're around the dead all the time. Mm-hmm. And so there was a dramatic decrease in priests. A lot of them were dying. And so to replace them, they had to be far less, what would be the right word? Prudent, far less strict with their guidelines on who they pick as priests. And so part of the theory of why after the Black Death and after those priests that came out of it were a bit more corruptible, a bit more hypocritical, and just not to... a more holy standard
And that's one of the effects of the Black Death. And I think you do see that to some degree in this book, of the types of characters that do get to become priests, and they're recent priests. That these priests haven't been around very well, but like all of the others are dead. So the corrupt ones get to pick up the slack. Mm-hmm. So I thought that's an interesting aspect of the world building. It did make me curious to look into a little bit of it, but that's a
neat.
I thought it was neat.
Neat, yes. And it was neat to see how the Franciscans were present in the book as well. Of that was a relatively recent sect, mm-hmm. that sprung about. Maybe that's the incorrect verbiage to call them a sect, but Franciscans who focus more on the poor, mm-hmm. impoverished, and they are a, I don't know if group of Catholics or Christians is accurate, mm-hmm. either, but essentially, yeah. the Franciscans came around in the 1200s or so, and we saw how they were present, and we had Thomas became a Franciscan by the end of the book as well. Just solid atmosphere overall. Mm-hmm. Man, this is go ahead.
This, I think, really ties right into prose.
Yeah, prose. I gave it 4. Great.
I did too. I think definitely the best aspect of this book is
how it's written, yeah.
The descriptions, the writing, especially I was pretty engrossed into the beginning of every part with the more biblical, just like the description of what the war is going on between heaven and hell. And
yeah,
that stuff was pretty riveting. I loved how it was written. Mm-hmm. It really grabbed you.
Yes.
Alongside of that, the characters all had a pretty good, unique character voice, and then of course on top of that, the pretty visceral, brutal descriptions of everything going on. So well handled.
Yes. Definitely.
I definitely think you would really like Black Tongue Thief, because it carries all this kind of good stuff with some other aspects I think we would both like more of. But it keeps the excellent prose and the great prose and
good,
really good world building.
Yeah, a couple quotes from the books. One is, God should be your comfort, but you have made comfort your God. Love that. Yeah. And then another one, love is always harder. Love means weathering blows for another's sake and not counting them.
I will say that first one is one of my pet peeves.
Yes, I know. When you switch, you just say the opposite of I like them.
I love them.
I eat them up.
I understand it sounds good.
It but does. It's,
I don't, yeah. I find it like trickery. It's like mentalists. It's a dumb mental trick. It's the same way of like, and the chorus is always better because it's repetitive. And
like podcasters should speak with your chest, but have you ever thought if your chest should speak with your podcaster? You got to flip the two things, and then all of a sudden it's profound. I get it.
Yeah, I know.
I know, but I like it. But okay, my example, obviously, is like the corny way. It doesn't make sense. But when it does make sense, it hits.
It doesn't have to be well written to be good, but it does have to be good to be well written.
Oh,
what did I say?
Oh
I
my
said
God!
Nonsense.
That is great writing advice.
I said nonsense.
That is you should do a memoir on that. You could do speeches, a TED talk. Say that again. So
that is
what
all
is
TED talks. By the
way,
what
do you mean by that?
Every thesis statement of a TED talk is just that, like, pneumatic device. That's all it is. It's like, guitar playing is incredibly skillful, but really what's skillful is being able to play the guitar. It's all dumb crap.
What's one that actually makes sense though? What's one that would be an adage that's used but is a good example of it?
Okay, fine.
Be gracious to it for a minute. Just get a good example to attack.
Getting a good example. Mm-hmm. To be, many think that to be successful, you have to be confident. But really, confidence comes from success.
Ooh.
Eh?
So tell us about that on your TED talk. I see what you.
I know.
That's what you'll hear though. That's the kind
of flip. A TED talk right there.
Yeah. Can you give one compliment to this book that doesn't just immediately go, yeah, I love the prose, but man, that's a pet peeve of mine too.
I just have a pet peeve with that line. Like the prose.
How about this one? Man is born into sin, all because of Adam. Guillaume said, mostly Eve, my priest told us. Delphine looked up from the water now. That's not fair. How's that? Said Guillaume. She was tempted by something stronger than her. Adam was tempted by a weaker creature. Or so we are told. If Eve was his inferior, his sin was greater. You can't have it both ways.
Very good.
Little dialogue line.
I like.
Little, hey, hypocrite.
Yeah, I do like it. It's pretty creative. Yeah. Pretty creative dialogue on the original sin. I like it.
Now, overall, Rich, your score. Has your score changed? Your perspective changed on the book at all? Because mine has.
No, I mean, ultimately, just on... If someone asked me of just, hey, what do you think of this book? Yeah, it's a really good book. I know most people will like it a lot more than me. As pure craft of writing, it's really good.
That's fair. I would say pure craft of writing, very solid. But I think I'm going to lower mine to a 3. And maybe a month from now, I'll look back and feel like it's a 2.75. But I'm right there. I'm going to go lower to a 3. Just I'm not as enthusiastic about the conversation.
Okay.
As much. Oh, you, great. Book. But that's our thoughts on Between Two Fires. Hope you at least watch this one. I can't even say enjoyed. Not all of them are bangers.
We can't be very enthused. We can't have the extremes all the time of, oh, we love the book. Oh, we hated the book. Sometimes we thought it was pretty fine. We're good. Really good. It's all well.
What do you think? Let us know down below. That was Between Two Fires. We'll see you next episode.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.